Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 124, 124, a small Fiat often made in Poland, on Tuesday the 15th of August 2017. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week we will be talking about how FCA are searching for a suitor, diesel trade-in deals, and is tech making us a worse driver? I will go straight, though, into some follow-up, and this will be a quick follow-up. Last week, or the week, I think it was 2 weeks ago, it was signed off that PSA had agreed the deal to buy Opel Vauxhall, but there was still one section that was still, information was still being finalised, I's dotted, T's crossed, and all that sort of stuff. And that was the finance side. And that has been confirmed now that PSA own the financial activities of Opel and Vauxhall. Is now owned by PSA and BNP Paribas, I think is how you pronounce it.
Paribas. Yeah, okay. So this
it's
was
French.
Really...
Right, sorry.
Yes, sorry. Oops. BNP's Banque Nationale de Paris. And this is really the not actually that being signed yet. That's expected to happen before the end of the year. What it is the EU antitrust authorities saying, no, you know what? It's okay. It's not going to be a problem if these two financial institutions merge.
Yes, I was jumping ahead of there. I was jumping.
You were a little
far too ahead. But yes, that's what it is.
Yeah. So that's got the green light, and that's going to go ahead.
So real news, quick, let's move on to it before any follow-up creeps up on us.
Before it changes underneath us like that one did last week.
Yes.
FCA, the great FCA sell-off. It's been going on for ages. His Sergio Marchioniness, he keeps going on about it. He's tried to join up with GM.
But they didn't answer the phone.
They said, no way. Yes, Mary didn't answer. They said no way. He tried to join up with Volkswagen, but Volkswagen got slightly distracted by something involving diesel engines that we've never really discussed at all on this podcast. And people have said, what about joining up with the Chinese? And he said, no, we're not going to join up with the Chinese because they're not looking for a partner. They're looking to buy someone. Well, the rumors have been going around since... end of last week, about FCA selling out to one of the big Chinese companies. Nobody's sure quite which one. It's still very much in the rumour muttering stage, so it's not an absolute, it's not completely confirmed yet. But the names that are in the light for this are Great Wall. Now, they do sell here in the UK anyway. They sell a version of a former Isuzu pickup that we got as the Vauxhall Rodeo some time ago. Dongfeng, Zhejiang Geely. Now, Geely, of course, already own Volvo, London Electric Vehicle Company, formerly London Taxi Company, and have lots of bits
Proton
and pieces.
And Lotus.
Proton Lotus as well. I knew there was something else we talked about. Lots of bits and pieces around the world. The other one, the fourth name in the frame, because of course people aren't really that certain at all, is their current joint venture partner, Guangzhou, as well.
I don't see the sense in this for Geely, only because Geely's really the only one I know anything about.
Yeah, well, the thing about this is that the Chinese government are really trying to... They're trying to do two things with the Chinese auto industry, first of which is to try and consolidate the many, many tiny little manufacturers which are scattered around the place, making one or two kind of slightly weird, I'm not going to say knockoffs, but really that's what I'm thinking, of European or American cars. And they're trying to get some consolidation there. They're also trying to get Chinese makers to expand outside of China and into the world market to learn and to get a bit more standing out there. Now, Geely, as you say, doesn't make sense because we know all about Geely. And we know that they are, have been out and they have been purchasing quite a lot. I'm not sure the Chinese government would support Geely going after another foreign automaker. I think they'd much rather Great Wall or Dongfeng or Guangzhou went for it.
Well, I mean, what's FCA got to sell? What's attractive that they make at the minute?
Well, it's not what they make at the minute. That's the thing. So, I mean, we've talked about Great Wall.
Okay, then what makes them attractive?
Nobody knows of them. They don't sell their cars outside of China. Okay, or certainly not outside. Maybe China. Maybe some African countries as well. So the appeal to them is that they become a big global brand. They become a global car maker with the ability to shift some of the stuff that they're either building in China or either building in China and sell it in Europe, or to take some of those brands and sell them in China as European cars or American cars.
Yeah, but the cars that are being sold, because Ferrari's, is Ferrari still counted as part of this FCA, or are they a separate entity? They're a separate entity, because aren't they? Because they launched on the stock market. So when someone goes to buy FCA, they are not buying Ferrari. So you've got
absolutely not buying
Maserati,
Ferrari.
Fiat, Chrysler, Jeep.
No, you don't.
Okay, go on then.
So they split off Ferrari, which makes it look even more like Marconi has been lining up for sale for a longer time. The brands involved in this are Jeep, Ram, Chrysler, Dodge, and Fiat. Alfa and Maserati are not included. It's already been stated. Alfa and Maserati are not included. Now that's puzzling. Now, so Jeep and Ram make all the money.
Okay, I can Marconi see Jeep as a global brand. Ram is not a global brand. I can see Jeep as a global brand. We buy Jeep in this country.
Doesn't matter.
And all the rest of it. But why would they take on such a loss-making thing unless they're going to cut?
So that brings me to the fact that what do you do with the Fiats and stuff? So either they've got... So they can simplify. They're inheriting the Chinese... Whoever buys Fiat are inheriting a lot of technology.
Are they?
So that makes their stuff better, in theory, okay? And a lot of years and years of manufacturing practice. But mostly they want... But does this mean that there's an output out there? They can simplify, you can share you can do component sharing, all that stuff.
FCA are already doing
that. Even if you're still
that.
Making... Well, they are, but where's that stuff
okay,
coming
I understand.
From?
I'm being a little picking at
you're
you
being a
bit
the bottom,
here.
But yes.
But no, because... this is similar to the conversation we've had before about the PSA buying Vauxhall Opel. There's, you know, but this one...
This one's more understandable than PSA.
Yeah, I'm from a point of view that they will suddenly have a global standing, I can understand that.
They've got some brands where they which are really strong. Just because we don't like get RAM and stuff, don't want big pickups, there is a market for that kind of stuff in China. All that chrome, all that John Wayne stuff that goes along with it is very, very big. The other one is even Fiat. Fiat is still a premium brand. There's space for that to be a premium brand in the Far East, not here. The flip side of that is what to them is a premium brand, to us is discount. So we will end up seeing Fiats being built in China. I'll be amazed if we don't.
I can see the sense if they said, right, Fiat, you will make the small city cars for everyone. And Jeep, you will do the off-road stuff. And Ram, you can do the big, gloriously over-the-top ridiculous stuff. And then they can take those components and add them to the Great Wall pickup. And, you know, the Great Wall pickup suddenly moves leaps and bounds.
Yeah, but... But remember the stuff like just because Chrysler, we got the Avenger, we got some rebadged launches. Now there's a brand that's missing. But it'll be included.
Don't cry.
It's almost dead. I know. I know. Tell me about it. But in other countries, Chrysler is still the proper Imperials from the '60s. It's all this. it's all that kind of aspirational stuff. It's not the crud that got sold here the last time they tried to sell Chrysler in the UK. So, you know, that has potential as a brand globally, even if not here. So that's where I feel that they're going with that. What's positive about this is how important Alfa is meant to be to the future future platform strategy for Fiat, Jeep, and Dodge.
How many Giulias are they selling?
It's also commercial vehicles too.
Yeah,
remember Fiat sell commercial vehicles.
Fiat vans do well in Europe. They do well in this. They do reasonably well in this country.
Yeah, but you get small compact pickups and stuff in South America too that we don't get. We don't think of.
Yeah. There is other elements. I mean, we're only looking at this country. I'm looking at this country and I'm looking at cars. I know. Yes, you're quite right. There are. It is a global business. It is a global industry. So yeah, you're quite right to point those out. And I have made you waffle way too long on this subject. Sorry.
Yeah, I knew this was going to have a lot of waffle because it's one that's going to be a lot of feeling on. It's remember, nothing has been decided or confirmed just yet. I mean, obviously we'll cover it whenever it is.
Yeah, it's August and people are looking for news items before the Frankfurt Motor Show.
Yes. In a word, yes.
But we all know that he is looking to sell as well.
He's made no secret of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably blocked on many executives' mobiles. Please block this number.
Yes. Oh, God, it's the guy.
It's the jumper. Mad guy. It's the V-neck.
It's the mad guy in the sweater again. That's what I was going to say.
Right, moving on.
Anyway. Yes, moving they on. Get a word out in this next story too for the scrappage, not scrappage.
Yes, just as diesels become horrific and awful for the last 18 months, anyone driving one is nearly a murderer, and the manufacturers, particularly the German premium ones, are suddenly haven't done anything wrong, but are, you know, out of the goodness of their own heart, updating software to make them more compliant. In a historical way. And coincide with all that, we've had five months of new car registrations falling.
Here in the UK, yes.
Yes, in the UK, particularly on the diesel side of things. All of a sudden, there's some scrappage schemes being launched by... Some in Germany, but some in this country too. BMW announced it. Vauxhall have had one going for a little while.
Yeah, since November last year.
Which seems to have done them very little good, looking at the figures. But it's been going on in Germany as well now. So Opel, Fiat Chrysler and Mercedes have launched their own trading scrappage schemes in Germany. So
they have different amounts depending on what you get. The only one that's actually a scrappage scheme, by the way, is the Opel one. It's the only one that's proper scrappage. Mercedes and Fiat, it's purely an amount against your trade-in and the vehicles don't have to get scrapped.
Oh, like BMW doing over here.
Yeah. So it's not proper scrappage. Supposedly, Ford is considering in Germany.
Then. There might be some bargains going out, not like the scrappage scheme where we lost cars that need to lose.
I'm quite proud, by the way, that one of my most influential tweets, according to Twitter and stuff, and the things that we use to measure this stuff, was actually my one pointing out the scrappage schemes when vehicle registrations are down. It's a bit like demolishing houses when house prices slump with that and not the silly selfie of myself outside the YouTube building.
I love that one. Everyone the family loved that one.
I imagine you're yanking my chain.
No, they all got to see it. Actually. Say, look, here's Uncle Alan.
That's really freaky. Right, shall we move on?
Yes.
You were saying about discount vehicles. The next story is yours too. Stop extracting the urine.
Yes, instead of doing that. Right, Auto Trader have announced that if your car is one is worth or is sold for £1,000 or less, they will not charge any fees, which is excellent, I think, considering I normally hover around the Banganomic type areas.
I think they're trying to take market back from eBay for that. Mm-hmm. Because, to be honest, Auto Trader fees are really quite high.
Yes, particularly if you're in the bottom end. If you're in the bottom end, it's the percentage-wise is quite bad. And something I haven't checked since this has come out, but they did tell me via Twitter that they were looking into their search algorithm, because when you would put a search term in for a specific amount of money, I was finding that there was cars being promoted that were significantly higher than that. And they said they were looking into that.
If you're having a hilarious afternoon of looking for very, very cheap vehicles, then the promoted vehicle, you know, you'd search for up to 2,000 because you'd be thinking of a specific thing. And then it would come through and it would be, you know, the top results in your listing would be for £4,000 cars. It's just like,
I was finding much more than that. And because I asked the question on Twitter, were the people who put those promoted tweets in being charged for me looking at something I would never click on?
Hmm. Because some of them, they do the opposite, though, and they put it in for like £300, and it's from this per month.
Oh, I hate that. Like, no, I hate that. Like, anyone who does that, you do not get my business straight immediately. Never. But there is an article linked here to this item, which is on MSN Cars, but is via a friend of the show, Andrew Brady, and Motoring Research, which is at the time that this news came out, he did a quick search on Auto Trader and found 25 brilliant cars you can buy for £1,000 or less.
That's just his standard. That's what he does every day.
I think anyway. He just looked in his saved, you know, his what is my saved search.
It would not be a huge movement from his usual behaviour for that.
No. But some of the choices are outside of Andrew's comfort zone, which is to mean they aren't completely crazy. This is not list of the week. So you can click on the link. I thoroughly encourage you to, and to then go and search for £1,000 and less cars on Auto Trader and have fun.
as if any of our listeners don't already do that kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah, but now we're making it a specific. There's a specific reason apart from
that's true.
Well, there's a why in the day.
It's not because they're going to blame us.
Only if they buy it.
Still, that's even worse.
Right, moving on.
Lotus. Lots of people have been saying that Lotus is back in profit.
Yay!
And it is. It is, by certain measurements.
Technically.
technically, it is. It is back in profit, yes. It's back in profit if you count the EBITDA, which is the earnings before interest, tax, deductions and something else, which I think is alignments, and I've now lost the story on my thing, so never mind. But anyway, the good news is that for the last operating year, they have, by that particular measure, made a profit of £2 million as opposed to a £16.3 million loss in the last operating year. So that 2016-2017 is plus £2 million as opposed to 2015-2016 being a loss of £16.3 million. When you go to pre-tax profits, there's a huge improvement. I mean, they only lost £11.2 million as opposed to £41.2 million in the period before. So it's good.
Yes, it's good news because we all like Lotus.
It is good news.
We all like Lotus.
But it's not the everyone going, Lotus is making a profit. Yeah, on paper up to a level. Yes, they are.
Yes.
On the other hand, good work by the Lotus management
more optimistic
team. Making
considering,
those significant,
considering they haven't had a new car.
There. No.
I mean,
as
Jake Grove says in the car article, which will be in the show notes, It seems revealing a new special edition sports car once every other day has done Lotus some good. You know?
Yeah, totally.
So there must be some serious cost cutting has gone on behind the scenes that we don't know about. And, you know, they're another company that desperately needs a new model, I think.
Yes.
And hopefully Geely. Please, Geely.
Yeah.
Please be good, yes. Geely. Please be good.
Just for clarity, EBITDA is earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization. There you go. When I first heard the term, to be honest, I thought it was a Welsh place, but it turned out I was wrong. Oh, yeah. I have to stop clicking my pen. Sorry, everyone. I should put the pen over there. What's next? I've completely lost track.
This is mine. I stumbled across
this. Sorry, the reason for all this chaos tonight, by the way, is because I wrote my notes in a specific order. I looked away and they'd all changed. And I can't change the order they're written down in my notebook.
So you should have done it digitally. Then it would have been fine. Mm.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Right, well, before anyone else has to listen to you bleating on about how you've written some notes for a change. Business car. Put this article out on Twitter. Yesterday, I think. Or was it today?
I think it was yesterday. Anyway, Business Car put an article on Twitter.
That there's going to be some software put out in Leeds and some testing for live emission reporting. And from that, the idea is that then they'll be able to control traffic and emission, and from that, emissions that are going on. So if something starts erring into the more dangerous end of the spectrum for us humans, as far as toxicity goes, that they have this information in real time, so they will be in a position where they can maybe redirect traffic or control what vehicles are going in and that side of things.
There was a really interesting part of this as well. I don't know if you noticed. They were saying that what they would use is they would use a telematics system unconfirmed or explained, that could, for example, theoretically, force a hybrid vehicle to use the electric power in its stored battery, instead of using its internal combustion engine, in the hope that if there were enough vehicles that it was doing that with, then that would lessen the emissions in that particular area, which I thought was quite interesting.
But yeah, let's have the authorities taking remote control of our vehicles at any time.
I knew you'd love that. Mm. But how they do it would be interesting, I think.
Yes, possibly. Securely.
Which made me think, because I started this and I thought, oh, that's quite interesting. And then I thought, oh, this is a bit of a thought piece, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm actually, and the further I got through this article, the less impressed with it I actually was.
Well, I think what this is the first stage of, and someone has extrapolated out without really thinking it through or looking at different sides of this conversation that needs to happen. So they've gone, well, it would be really good if we had live, real-time information on the emissions and the air quality. Yes.
I'm amazed they don't already have that, to be perfectly frank.
It all seems to be historic. It all seems to be, there is a lag. So I don't understand why there's a lag, considering everything's, you know, connected to a computer. We should be able to do it. Yeah. Yes, we should be able to do it live.
Yes, we should be able to do it live.
But then somebody's gone, because if we have this information, then look, we can then maybe shut streets. Or wouldn't it be good if we then just told, as you just said there, told all the hybrids to go into electric mode for the next half hour, then the air quality. Not thinking, because they're only thinking it from one angle. They're thinking at it, this would make air quality better. Not thinking about, what about security? What about, you know, people jumping up and down? Hi, I'm here all week. As far as civil liberties, you know, things like that. So this is hopefully the start of a conversation that needs to happen where clever people can think about all the aspects and see what is the best outcome to hopefully satisfy as many people as possible. It's never going to make everyone happy. That won't happen. That we have to accept that. But hopefully we'll be in a position where it hits the needs of most people most of the time.
Yes, I think that that's obviously the aim of the game. We'll see what's possible as time goes on.
Mm. Right. This is our weekly reminder, our countdown.
It is our countdown. yes, countdown to our road trip. I'm terrified. Countdown to our road trip happening in a couple of weeks' time from the 28th until the
2nd.
3rd. 2nd, thank you.
2nd, please.
I do have the right date. 3rd.
2nd, please.
yes, our countdown, 28th to 2nd, when we are going to be driving our way around the UK in a Hyundai Ioniq EV, trying to check out the just how up for it the current charging infrastructure actually is.
Yeah.
So we'll be more news on.
I mean,
that
we are taking
time,
this to just, quite an extreme to test this out.
Oh, we're being totally nuts. I mean, we are
going very left field with a very middle of the road electric vehicle. You know, we are pushing limits and things like that.
We are, and as we all know, in a good, you know, multimodal future, we will actually use things like shared and nice public transport to move from one end of the country to the other, and for longer vehicles. No, we won't. We'll use hydrogen and things. But yeah, it's interesting to try. I mean, a couple of interesting, slightly frustrating conversations on Twitter this week about this and about what happens when you do longer vehicles. With EVs and on battery power.
Well, it was a bit stereotypical.
To find some of the
it was
those.
A bit stereotypical. The responses. It was.
Yes.
It was. We're going to run an electric vehicle. What's the point in that? Petrol, you just fill up and go. Splash and dash. Yeah. Blah blah blah. There's two of you. You can just keep going. And it's like, well, that's not the point. The point is, we're testing what happens now. And from that, we can then come back and say, yeah, no, it's not the same. And we know it's not the same anyway, before we even start. All of us know it's not the same. So
I just
how
think
realistic
age is
it for so many people?
I just think age is catching up with me because, frankly, about every 100 to 120 miles, I find I need to stop anyhow. Never mind the car, I need to stop. So I think that is age, isn't it? Or it's keeping hydrated whilst on the move, because that's a good fight against being distracted. Anyhow, in the meantime, if you'd like to support things like that, I'll remind you very, very quickly about our Patreon, which is a way that you can support the Motoring Podcast by donating a small amount every month. If you'd like to know more, then head to motoringpodcast.com and click on the orange Become a Patron button there on the front page of our website. If you're already a patron, then thank you so very much. It really does make a difference, and it makes stuff like the Charging Around Britain absolutely, absolutely possible. So thank you very, very much with that. We're trying to get one new patron every month. That's kind of our target. So please, please, please let that be you. That would be absolutely brilliant. We understand not everyone has the ability to do this, so please don't forget to like, rate, and leave feedback for the show, and also for Rear View, via the podcast player of your choice. There we go.
Mm.
So there was an article in Wired that I spotted this week about Tesla Model 3, and I thought it was kind of amusing. It caught my attention anyway, and it was like, okay, so you want a Tesla Model 3? How can you get your Tesla Model 3 more quickly than maybe the rest of the other, what is it at the minute, 450,000 people or something?
Allegedly
450, yes. Allegedly 500,000 reservations in there. So there were kind of four key ways that that Jack Stewart commented were suggested as a way as a way to manage this. So if you want one of the very, very first Tesla Model 3s, you've kind of missed the boat on that one, because the first way to get it, and the best, the quickest, is to work for the Lord Musk himself. So either work for Tesla, work for the Boring Company, or work for... Is it still called the Boring Company?
Don't get me started on that.
No, I know. Or SpaceX. Working on the basis that if there are glitches with early cars, then, of course, the employees are likely to be the most forgiving amongst them. Second way, again, probably missed the boat, is to already own a Tesla. If you already have a Tesla Model X or a Tesla Model S, then you're more likely to be further up the queue. Because you know all about Teslas. You're all about Teslas. You are already in there, and you're already in. You're already part of the family, so to speak. Third way, a bit of an extreme one here. Move to the US. Right-hand drive won't actually be released for ourselves, for Japan, for Australia, for New Zealand, until about 2019. So. That's all right, because currently, if you put your money down now, it's going to be mid to late 2018, provided nothing goes wrong.
In the US.
In the US, yes. And last but not least, buy a high spec. It seems you need to go for the long-range rear-wheel drive high spec without the white interior. Is really what they're building first. They're limiting the number of choices you can have. In the early days, and then branching out from there. So the $35,000 base model with nothing added? Not yet, folks. Not yet. You're not going to be first on the list. But the good news is that if you are that much later, you are after the 6 months of production hell, which will probably mean you end up with a better car.
Yeah. Only 6 months. Only that. 6 months. It'll all be fixed then.
Only 6 months. But there's an S, Andrew. There's an S. It's quite simple. It goes along, it goes up a bit, and then it levels off.
Yeah. Because all the cars on the planet, and Mars, because he's going to Mars, will be Teslas. So.
Yeah, well, because of, yeah. Yes. Anyway, enough of my sarcasm.
Yes, quite before we we descend into rants. An article that I spotted that was from MIT Technology, and they were asking the question, are semi-autonomous cars making us worse drivers? And I have issues with autonomous being used, but driver aids is what we're basically talking about. That's effectively what we're talking about. Assists.
This debate has been going on since cruise control. Since normal everyday cruise control was introduced, this debate has been going on. In fact, it's been going on before then. It's been going on since the automatic transmission was increased. And we still see the effects of that now, where people go, oh, it's an automatic. I'm a real driver. I drive a manual. And all this kind of stuff. So this is a debate as old as the hills. Whatever comes along, people will misuse it and will abuse it. You know? So the guy who crashed his Tesla, having held onto the steering wheel for 27 seconds in the last 35 minutes or whatever it was of driving before his car smashed into the side of a lorry.
Yes, but his car shouldn't have allowed him to do that either.
It shouldn't have allowed him to. It shouldn't have allowed him to let go. And as a result, the car now doesn't let you do that.
But this is something we've talked about recently, though. I have discussed this with a couple of people on Rear View Chat, and I know we've talked about this sort of thing. When there is a technology missing, we notice it. I'm thinking blind spot awareness, and I'm also thinking, with the current car I have, the Outback, I'm thinking the parking sensors. I notice they are not there, and that when these things are not there, if you are not paying attention all the time, and let's be realistic, none of us are paying attention 100% of the time, you know, to 100% of the level that we need to be, it can catch us out. It can, you can suddenly go, oh, crikey, I don't have that, do I? Or that's not there. And I don't know if lazy's quite the right word. It may be more we have become used to them being there.
Out of practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had that Subaru BRZ the other week, and it's a coupe. It's got quite a high back window. It also has neither parking sensors nor a reversing camera. And I remember I realized how in anything but a tiny little car, I've grown unused to not having them. By the end of the week, it was fine.
10, 15 years ago, that wouldn't have been... You'd never notice that, would you?
No. I would actually have been... Yeah, no. No.
So where these things do come in and help us, we do become used to them. We do rely, maybe it's a bit strong, but we accept them in our lives and in the car,
mm-hmm.
and how they can assist us. So, crying out loud, I happened to be flicking through Twitter and someone was live streaming their journey home from holiday from their dash cam, which, one, please don't do that. And two, if you are doing that, don't sit in the middle lane when there's nothing on the inside lane.
Oh, yeah. It's like if we're
but
ever
then as
recording...
they came up to a car in front, the adaptive cruise control slowed them down, the car moved over, they sped up again. Instead of how would we have done it 10, 15 years ago or 20 years ago, we're paying attention, we're in the left-hand, you know, majority of us are in the left-hand lane. It's not the epidemic that it is now, that's for sure, Alan.
I don't think it was the epidemic that it is now.
No. So we would, you know, there was less traffic as well. That has to be acknowledged in all this. So whilst they do help us, perhaps we become used to them, accept them, rely on them, and they are not always on, they are not always going to work, and we presume they will.
Yep, agreed. And we need to just be aware of that, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Right, moving on.
Cool, moving on. Another interesting article came across. I don't want to discuss this in a huge amount of depth, really, because there will be a link in the show notes. And it's an interesting 10 minutes over lunch type read, which I'd recommend. It's from The Economist, and it's about the death of the internal combustion engine. And it's talking about what's going to happen as it phases out, what the difference is going to be on manufacturing, on the engineering, on everything that supports it, really. It's not hugely long. As I say, it's a quick 5 to 10 minute read. But it's good, and it's an interesting thought piece. So if you're even vaguely interested on whichever side of that particular article, then it's worth a quick click on the link that'll be in the show notes. Another one that's good, which wasn't really in our running order, sorry, Andrew, is on LinkedIn, actually, and it's another piece by Plassan, chief designer, Nir Khan, about packaging of vehicles. He's been writing a second little set of blogs all about vehicle design on there. I'm making sure to share them, but if you... Yeah, so they're there. They're on LinkedIn. They're under Nia and they're under Plassan, and they're available for everyone there. But they're, yeah, the current one about packaging and how cars are mostly just becoming expected space around occupants is really, really interesting. I had a good read of that whilst I was on the train the other day. So those are thoroughly recommended as well for some backup reading. Once you're done listening to us, although please don't read them whilst you're driving. Listen to us whilst you're driving. Read them some other time.
Yes, quite.
So, it's time for long-term test car update of the week.
Yes, quite. So, regular listeners will know that I currently am driving around in a Subaru Outback 2-litre DSE Premium Lineotronic. Top of the range.
We're not going to talk quite as much as we did last week.
No, no, there is less because this week's update is about the driving experience. But first, before I get into that, I have a correction. I have a correction. I erroneously dismissed...
You grumbled like heck.
Dismissed the curry hooks in my disappointment, only because in my ineptitude, I hadn't worked out how to use them properly. I presumed right. that they were just a hook that dropped down. However, if you use them correctly, you press them in, they drop down, you put the handle of your bag on and push them up again and they lock back in place and it's locked. Nice and
Did
safe.
You get corrected?
No, no, no.
Were
I
you
worked,
told
no,
off by
no, no,
PR?
No, no, not at all. Not at all. They, okay. they didn't have a word with me about that at all, which is very good of them because... but I worked it out myself. Because I thought that.
Well done.
Because I went back to that after I'd said it, and I thought that can't be right. That the hook's not the right shape. Nothing. And I played about, and I said, I've been thick. Is what the problem is. It is not the car. It is me.
Okay.
Right. Moving on to some housekeeping. I have not filled up this week, so I cannot give you any accurate MPGs. However, I've done about 285 miles and I have an indicated range left of about half a tank. So,
okay. So it won't be, double that. It'll be about 200 odd miles.
Yeah. Anyway. Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. Right. So Outlander, Outback even, is a jacked up estate, as you know. And, as a result of the way it's been set up, which is slightly towards the softer side. Now, most...
It's good for off-road.
Yes, well, most modern cars are to firm, medium to firm. This is just medium-soft, I would suggest. As a result, there is a tiny bit of roll in it, that has to be said, but not in a... you know, 70s wallowing barge type manner in any stretch of the imagination. But it makes sure that the ride is really comfortable on the roads. There has been no incidents of people complaining and there has been no incidents of even a hint of travel sickness by any of
Your
the passengers.
Famous last words there.
Yeah, so far. I've been really impressed with the ride. It has been very good on the road.
So has it been the opposite of Tune for the Nürburgring then?
Yes, quite. Yeah, exactly the opposite of that. The diesel engine. Now, it's generally really quiet. This has been commented on by important people in the cabin. And Mrs. Correct Windscreen has said quite often, she said, oh, it's very quiet, isn't it? There's a little bit of clatter as it starts up when it's cold, which I think we all expect with the diesel, really.
Yeah.
But after it's up and running, it's very quiet in the cabin from that. And it's very quiet in the cabin full stop when you're driving along, particularly on motorways. If you've got the right surface as well, it's almost silent.
So it'll be great in France, then, where it's
ridiculously quiet. The tyre noise is minimal. There's a little bit of wind noise around the big, very useful wing mirrors. But I think that's more just the shape of them and, you know, the size. But I am really surprised at how quiet it is just driving along generally in that.
So how's the Lineotronic system? Because before we'd found that it was really good. Apart from when you were moving off in a rush. Is that still the case?
Only if it's cold. I found that slight small lag when it's cold. When it's up to temperature, it's not a problem.
That'll explain why the time that we tried it, we were doing it first thing in the morning, and that was when we noticed it.
Yes, exactly. It was purely that. I think you adapt to it quite quickly, so you anticipate that. So that you don't try and take you know, like a gap, you would...
Liberties.
Yes, you would. You're not taking narrow gaps that, you know, is probably okay if you put your foot down type thing. You don't do that. You just wait for a larger gap. So, yeah. But you know, once it's up to temperature, I have not noticed it. And like I was saying last week, I just love the system. I love the smoothness and the feeling that there is just this constant stream of power there. It's just going to keep giving me in this really smooth manner. You know, I will just keep going and going until, you know, I've reached the speed I need to get to, or I want to be at, and then it just cruises along at that speed type thing.
Or a bit quicker than you want to be at.
Yeah, that is a bit of a problem. I mean, this is a 2-litre engine. This is quite a large vehicle. All-wheel drive, so it's not light either. And there are times I've been driving along and then sort of going, oh, I'll just check it. Oh, I'm at that speed. Okay, just ease off a little bit. That's okay. Because you are so cosseted in it. You are so cosseted. The ride is so comfortable. You know, you're not sort of going, oh, I'm going over everything. Nothing like that. You're just... Floating is taking it a bit too far, but you are... Things have been evened out. I mean, we're not talking... flying carpet stuff here, but because of all the thing that's gone on, you are suddenly at a speed that you didn't anticipate you were at, because you know we're old enough to have grown up with cars where you go, what's the engine noise, I know what speed I'm doing type thing. You don't have that.
I might still have some like that. Yes, yeah.
I don't have that luxury with this, so I've been very impressed with that it's just, I mean, when you absolutely floor it, there is a noise, you know, you do get a noise from that. But like I say, once you get to the speed that you want to be at and you're cruising along, it's very refined in that point of view.
Cool.
Steering-wise, it's a bit numb.
Does it go round corners?
Yeah, it's a bit neutral, a bit numb, but where I point it, it goes. You know, I'm not in a WRX. I'm not looking for, you know, all the feedback in the world. Oh, look, the gravel got slightly larger as I got round the corner. You know, I'm not interested in that. You know, am I smoothly going around the corner? I'm not having to make corrections all the time. There's no play in the steering wheel. That'll do. That's nice. Thank you very much. Let's keep going. I can let go of the wheel and it keeps in a straight line. It's not trying to veer one way or another. You know, that's... You know what? In this type of car,
no,
what more are you
after?
I agree
completely with you. No, you're completely right. I'm just laughing at the let go of the wheel that goes on. It's like that's when there's a problem with a new car.
Yes,
yes. But I think you're completely right. It's you know, with that kind of ride, you don't want to be feeling the colour of the dumper you've run through or whatever. You know, it's important. And the last thing, of course, is that it's got four-wheel drive. And whilst I imagine you've not been doing much green laning.
No. No, I've been in narrow lanes, but they've not been specifically green. Symmetrical four-wheel drive. Don't forget to say that, symmetrical. Otherwise, the people with Subaru balaclavas will come and hurt us if we don't say symmetrical.
Yes.
but with all that, funnily enough, the car grips really well.
Well, it would do. It's a Subaru. It's what they do. It's kind of what they're famous for.
Yeah, and again, with the steering that goes where you point it, I have massive amounts of confidence that wherever I want to go, I'm going to go. I mean, I know I've taken it off-road, and even with my inability to drive off-road, I didn't get stuck. You know, we have video... No, I eventually got out. We have video proof that I could eventually get out. So I've got so much confidence in this car that wherever I'm going, that... Well, not in an arrogant way, but just because I feel like I know something other people don't.
Okay.
Because there's an awful lot of people are going like a big SUV. You know what my thoughts are on an estate anyway.
Yeah,
I love an estate, and I think that people have forgotten how useful and how much an estate can do for them. over, say, an SUV that doesn't necessarily have the space that they anticipated it might, because it's essentially a raised up car, but not necessarily a big one. And and I'm driving around, sort of going, there's so many people around here who don't understand that this does so much more than their car can do. And I'm looking at some premium SUVs here as well. This will go in places theirs won't.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, and this is in my likes of the week.
Yes, I was going to ask about this because I was going to ask if this was related to the to
well, this is part of my. I feel like I'm I know something others don't, because in the last week or so, other Outback owners have acknowledged, we have acknowledged each other's presence on the road in a very drive along.
Oh, the finger of acknowledgement. Yes. I mean the good finger of acknowledgement, not the bad finger of acknowledgement.
Yes, you're one of the club. Don't say anything too loud. Shh, quiet. That's it. Just a nod. Just a dig in the cap. And that's been amazing.
That's so sad.
I know, I'm so childish, but it's been fantastic because I feel like really I'm in this little club.
For those of you that can't see the great ear-to-ear grin that he's giving as he goes through this, it's really quite pathetic from a grown man. So you've been overwhelmingly positive, but there was one thing.
Yeah, in the last
under the surprises.
In the last week, I have been becoming increasingly annoyed
dirty trouser leg.
With my... Yes, with my dirty trouser leg, as much as my constant forgetting that I'm going to get a dirty trouser leg unless I lift my leg over the slightly wider sill because of plastic cladding and stuff, which does a fantastic job of attracting all the muck in the where I have been driving. It has been plastered with that.
That is one of the two downsides of cladding.
Yeah, and
you have the fading, and you have the makes the inside of your trouser leg dirty.
Yes, so I am getting better at remembering I need to step slightly wider out as I get out. But that, I mean, it's quite pathetic,
that's the
of everything. I'm going, I just got my trouser dirty. Which is mainly down to me.
Yeah,
but
that's what I would have said.
But the thing is, there's for what I want it to do, it is doing everything I need it to do at the moment. I am
still in love,
struggling to find real major downsides with it.
Is it right? Okay, quick one. Is it going to be just as well you're not present when the little man from Subaru comes to take it back?
It's probably best. It's probably best that I'm not there, because I then can't get too upset.
Okay, that's good. I just thought it was worth checking. Anyway, we've got another couple of stories before we round up. How are we doing for time? We're doing not badly for time this week, actually. First up, one that really appeals to me, Mazda are going to be launching a Roadster restoration program. Whilst they've announced it now, it doesn't actually start until 2018. And it is only for the NA, MX-5, Miata, Unos Roadster. So that's the Mark 1 in Japan. It'll bring a car back to factory spec of whatever model it was, or absolutely as close as they can get it. They're going to be remaking and releasing I was going to say new replica parts, but they're not replica parts because they're from the original sources. New parts, stuff like soft tops, the original spec Bridgestone SF325 tires, Nardi steering wheels that Mr. Johnny the Edge loves so much on the smooth traffic MX-5, Nardi gear knobs, all that kind of stuff. They're announcing it now. It's going to start in 2018. these could be awesome enough that it's worth shipping. If you want an MX-5 or a UNOS Rotor that's been imported into UK, it could be worth sending it back to Japan to get it rebuilt and back again.
This press release, though, that smacks to me of, we're saying this now, gauging interest from abroad. I can see them doing spreading them out around the world.
Then we start
in Japan. Oh, there's been such a clamour for it. There's one in Britain.
Oh, totally. I also added a link into the list, Andrew, for the actual Mazda site about this and what it says. It's in Japanese. Your favorite search engine's translate button of choice will translate it into very readable English, surprisingly, which goes through it all. And it's all going to be... and the vehicles are going to be checked and signed over by TÜV Rheinland, who happen to be a German, who are the German inspectorate, one of the German inspectorates, and they will be testing and certifying all the vehicles once they're finished to make sure that they are up to spec and they have been done properly. That would be just fab.
Yes, I think that's a great
idea. I think it's a really cool idea.
Because Porsche have recently announced their... the classic restoration Jaguar Land Rover they did their big reveal of their special skunk works of historics. You know, I can see this happening more and more with brands, particularly those who have kept very fondly in the heart of petrol heads.
Well, remember the very first MX-5s are almost 30 years old now. Well, they will be by the next year when they're done. So, you know, they are proper classics, if you know what I mean. So I think this is really cool. And let's face it, it's a vehicle that has saved Mazda and kept Mazda going whilst times have been tough with other vehicles. So I think it's fantastic that they're getting in relatively early within this.
Yep.
Which I think is fab. Which brings us... as we start to round up to a list of the week. This week's list of the week is from our friends at Motoring Research, and it is the coolest cars of the year that you were born. So going, and it is, as you can imagine, with a story like that, it is a Major Gav special. So right from 1957. Right the way through until...
2000.
Is it 2000?
2000.
Yeah, 2000, because 2017, that's it. You'd have to be that age to get a driving license. 2000. He has gone through and he has chosen one vehicle from each of those years, which is the coolest thing that was launched to remind you. And depending on how old you are, it includes the original Honda Insight, Alpha 164, 1987. God, that's ages ago. That is 30 years. Gee, 30 years ago. The Honda Quintet. By the way, what is cool, Gav, about the Quintet? You're asking, is the Quintet cool? Absolutely, we're not entirely sure why. The reason is that dashboard clock. It has an electromechanical dashboard clock where the numbers flip round as opposed to being, you know, digital or any of those things. That's the only thing that's cool about Honda Quintet. I'm glad I wasn't born in 1981. 1976, Aston Martin Lagonda, Maserati Sebring from the 1960s, and Jaguar Mark II from 1959, and everything in between. I'm not going to go through all of them. But there is some fab stuff in there because it's a Major Gav job, so it's a little bit left field.
Yep. Good list. Good spot.
It is. It's a cracking list, that one. Yep. One of the best. That, by the way, is one of the best that we've covered, I think.
Mm.
So it's that good.
Right then.
But finally, Andrew.
And finally, even though Formula E has finished for this season, FIA Formula E has compiled to music the most impressive crashes of the season in a short video.
Somebody was going to do it. Why don't they just do it officially?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's the Season 3 Formula E crash compilation.
5 minutes, 38 seconds of crashing electric race cars.
It is excellent. And the music, and the music they've picked has been selected wonderfully, and they have synced the crashes to the music. Or the music has been synced to the crashes.
I haven't watched it all the way through, because this was one of your ones.
Yes, I quite like that one. Click the link. Enjoy. Just to get you, just to keep you going for Formula E until it's back again.
I shall watch it weekly. Or something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that rounds us up for this week. So don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget our Patreon available at motoringpodcast.com as well. And please, please leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really, really does matter. Andrew, if people can tell you how they, you should be using parts of your Subaru correctly, what's the best way?
Yes.
Rather than emailing me and getting me to tell you.
Yes, would be to search for Crack Windscreen on Twitter. You will find me there. And Alan, if people would like to get in touch with you and maybe pick a hole or two in the route that will be put out there, the rough route of charging around Britain, as we're calling it, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way to do that is on Twitter, probably, which is where I'm at, AJP Bradley. But using the contact page of the website also gets to me. And it'd be really nice to have something through there that isn't spam or trying to sell me some sort of service that I really don't want. Until then, though, we'll be back next week. I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.